Okay, Marjorie, now let me do the talking.
Yes, dear.
Because if there's one thing I know, it's talking. I wasn't a botanist for 45 years, only to get screwed out of my hard-earned money over a faulty chaise-long.
No, dear.
Right, you there, man. Go get me the manager.
Yes, sir. I won't be a moment. I'm dealing with these people right now.
Dealing with these people? Dealing with these people? What are you babbling about, you wonky-eyed little turd? Get the manager this instant, or I will have you ritually glazed in fat.
Sir, I would be most obliged if you just kept your voice down a little while I finish up here, and I will be with you momentarily. If you like, you can read this to buy the time.
What is it?
It's a pamphlet on the Stalinist purges, written by a tiny fellow who lives in a hollowed-out watermelon, made a fortune on the black market selling underground tweed and flannel.
Well, sounds like a damn sensible chap. I might invite him over one weekend for a stirring game of backgammon.
I would, sir. He fucking loves the game. Oh, look, there's the manager now, wetter than usual, but that's him over there by the portrait of Desnum Lynham defecating on a pot plant.
Oh, yes. Well, I don't like his mustache, but I suppose he'll do. Hello, you. Now, I understand you're the manager.
The what, sir?
The manager.
I am the overlord, if that's what you mean. We don't use the words manager here, sir, in the Dungeon of Weeping Teats.
Pardon?
Only the High Priest Alan can pardon you, but I could certainly offer you a biscuit, some milk, and continue to pull yourself together. 'Tis the Feast of Merry Twins soon, sir, and there will be much rubbing of thighs.
Listen, enough of this, Tosh. I came into this shop with my good lady wife.
Oh, that's your wife? I thought the Daxons had the runs again.
Yes, sadly, her complexion has been rather ruddy of late. I think it's all the ham. Still, we came in here because last week we purchased a chaise longue from this, I hasten to call it a shop, and now it's all faulty.
A chaise longue?
You know, it's a, well, dash it, it's a French chair. The kind you see slim people draped over in magazines after a night of heavy heroin.
Oh yes, the Louis XIV Mark VII, sir. Upholstered in freshly slaughtered badger pelt and dyed a disgusting shade of mottled sick. I know the one. What about it?
Well, I got it home and it hadn't been in the living room much longer than a day when it went all faulty. I would have brought it back earlier, but this week is my people's special religious holiday and I've had so many whales to harpoon I haven't known which way was up. Blubber's a bugger to get out of the linoleum.
Well, you don't have to tell me. I didn't realise I was talking to a fellow Huddist.
Oh, yes, indeed. I never miss an episode, him and that funny emu bird of his.
So your chair's all faulty, then?
That's right. It doesn't vibrate, can't make oxtail soup, and instead of playing a merry tune when you cough near it, now all it does is a sort of dull electronic squeak, sort of like the death rattle of a plug-in duck.
And I suppose you want us to replace it or your money back. What? I fail to see how any of this is my problem.
Well, at the very least, we'd like our money back.
Can you still sit on it?
Oh, yes, I can do nothing but sit on it. Marjorie's been coming in trying to get me to eat something off her milky breast, and I've been ruthlessly sitting on the bastard. All it's good for is sitting.
Well, I fail to see the problem, but that may have something to do with me having just swallowed my contact lens. Look, speak to Simon, son of Albermeister over there. He's the man with his hand in his trousers drooling over a fishing magazine.
Listen, I don't want to speak to any Simon, even if that is a stunningly arousing turbot. I wanted to speak to the manager.
Overlord.
Whatever.
Well, congrats. You have spoken to him, as I am him. Now leave me alone or I'll be forced to wipe mold on you.
Well, this is no good at all. I'm going to be complaining to my local representative. It's that weasel-faced fellow who hangs around bridges offering handjobs for novelty T-shirts or puppets of Lenin.
Good luck with that, then.
Customer service in Britain is bloody despicable. You act perfectly reasonably, you try not to fart too much, and where does it get you?
Not so fast, Mr. F of Minsk. You just won our star customer prize here on This Sketch Just Won't End, the game show on Radio Flange Goblet that's fun for all the family, as long as most of them are already dead. Celia, tell them what they've won.
Well, you will be whisked from here to a 3.5-star hotel in Nepal where you will have all of your nipple hairs plucked out and given to a tap-dancing toad man named Rupert who once took a photograph of Alan Bennett's tortoise without permission. You will have an all-expenses-paid dromedary ride up the Kangchenjunga Mountain where you will be left with Keith Harris and Orville to fend for yourself for 3 days with only a posing pouch and a lasso made out of bacon. Lastly, you get an elegant cruise on the pedalo of your choosing back to England. On the boat, there will be some soggy Ritz crackers and a copy of Hammond Organ My Way by Nevis Crank. When and if you make it to the coast, you will be dragged by a flock of disgruntled and flatulent pigeons to the after-movie diner for some slap-up grub
and some rather tedious film-based conversation. Sounds delightful.
Here we are in Market Diner, which is, for people who want to know, it's on 43rd Street and 11th Avenue. We've just been to see...
Do you want a drink?
...Stranded. No, I'm going to be good with ice water. It's going to be fine.
Can I get a coffee? Thank you very much.
We've just been to see Stranded.
Stranded with Christian Slater.
Christian Slater at the AMC 25 on 42nd Street. And the whole new idea behind some of the episodes we're going to be doing at the After Movie Diner with me and my sort of, well, what will be semi-regular co-host from now on, Mr. James Jim or J.A. Wallace.
Hello.
Oh, there he is again. If you remember recently, we did the controversial Pacific Rim episode.
Controversial for people without eyes.
And now we're going to be doing this. And the whole new idea is to kind of do... It's going to be a bit more ramshackle. It's going to be a bit more down and dirty. But the idea will be to see a movie in a theatre that is like a little odd or a little offbeat or a little left field or something you wouldn't normally see.
Oh, thank you very much.
That's great, man. Thank you. So to see a movie that you wouldn't normally see, so not like one of the big main releases, but a little release that would probably only screen in a place like New York where there's 25 screens or whatever.
So the reviews of those movies that you read that get really, really low grades,
right?
You know, they're never going to be seen outside of a DVD.
We are going to go and watch
those. We are going to get to see those.
On the big screen. And at the same time, we are going to go to diners that are nearby the cinema as much as possible. And we'll do a little review of the diner as well. So here we are in Market Diner. And
I'll just say it's very cool. As soon as I saw it across the street, it looks like a proper... diner for a movie. It's big and silver.
Yeah,
and it's big windows.
And it's all like mad shapes.
Orange vinyl booths.
Big, very 70s decor.
Yeah,
but it's apparently
it's nobody here. And that's quite a big place. Very cool.
So what are we going to have?
I'm really tempted by the Carson City sandwich because it's called Carson. I really want to get a Carson City sandwich.
Carson City is the capital city of Nevada.
Oh, okay.
Which is hilarious because out of Nevada, most people know Reno and Las Vegas.
Mm.
But Carson City is the capital city.
Oh, yeah. I think I'm going to go to Carson City.
In the States, the capital city of the States is always the one city you don't expect it to be.
Like
in New York, it's Albany.
Albany.
Right.
I didn't know that. Because everyone's always complaining on the news about those people in Albany.
Those people in Albany. They hold the purse strings, that's why.
Yeah, they do, yeah. That's right. Well, they're just like, all they do is they send a whole bunch of like greedy people.
Yeah.
And sent them far away, right? And gone, you sit in that building, right, with a whole load of money, and let's see what happens. Well, weirdly, craziness and corruption, that's what happens.
That's exactly what happens. There's enough craziness and corruption here in New York City, though, to...
Well, that's true. That's true. Anyway, yeah. It's a very, very cool, proper, old-fashioned diner. Like, normally they're just, they just look like restaurants, really, except that the kind of the food they serve. But this one actually does look like a proper diner.
Right, and it's certainly been here a while.
And on our way, because we saw the film in Times Square, we walked past some delightful New York sights.
Like,
there was the guy hobbling across the pavement with a cane,
yeah,
and then standing over the drain and being violently sick. But it was a real movie sick, because it wasn't like proper sick. It was like proper like white liquid, you know, like...
Dude, if you could describe the sick intricately before I order my meal, that would be fantastic.
I'm just saying, you know how normally when people are sick in movies, it's like that kind of white liquid. You go, oh, people are never sick like that. Well, this guy begs to differ. Maybe he was just throwing up pure despair. Like, that's like the colour of despair.
It was pretty...
Oh, and halfway through the film, like some old, really big tramp guy with a little cart came in.
He had a cart and several plastic bags, and they proceeded for the rest of the 40 minutes of the movie to rustle through the bag. And surely the contents of that bag are not worth all this rustling. Surely you've just got an old mouldy sweater and a couple of
shoes. It's probably his dinner was in there. That's where he keeps his despair sandwiches.
He was still looking for the despair sandwiches as we left.
It was great because he didn't go to like the first seat. He walked over a bed.
He was asking people if there was a dog in there. That's what he was doing.
Maybe once upon a time he went to like fall asleep at a cinema and instead got attacked by a dog. And now the first thing he does when he wants to go to the cinema is make sure there are no dogs.
Is there a dog in here?
Lost my leg to a dog back in 75.
Yeah. I can't find something I want, which is a bit depressing, isn't it? This is all gold, every bit of it. People are loving
somebody
it.
Somebody famous out here, who is that? They've got a picture of like one person. This is one person. Stop. It doesn't even fit on the wall, folks. I'm just saying.
No, they're probably a good friend of the thing.
It's a very cool sign. When we're on the right side of the big road, all the yellow cabs are running by, and the right, because we're in Midtown, big huge skyscrapers right next to us. It's very cool. It is very cool.
I really don't know what I want. This is a bit terrible.
I am. He is having a really difficult time cheesing.
I think I'm just going to have a cheeseburger. So
okay, right, fine, cool. Can I get the Carson City sandwich?
Okay, sir.
Thank you.
Can I get a cheeseburger with Swiss?
French fries?
Yeah.
How do you like cooked?
Oh, well. Well done. Can I also get bacon on that as well, please? Bacon. And a side of brown gravy for the fries, but a side of it. Thank you.
Okay. Magic. Thank you very much.
Okay, so yes, as I announced at the beginning, that we've got the wonderful James Wallace in the diner this
Hello.
Evening, and we're going to be discussing Stranded.
Got an emergency situation, incoming meteor shower.
You got to take a look at this.
Came in direct contact with those spores.
You have what appears to be a massively accelerated pregnancy.
No! No! Don't do it!
You're showing signs of paranoia. It's hallucinating.
Looks like it's just you and me then, huh?
For now. Whatever you think you saw. It wasn't Bruce.
Seems hell-bent on killing us.
He's trying to collapse the system.
Jesus Christ!
It knows we're trying to kill it.
We have evidence of an alien life form.
It's coming back.
Ava!
This
is an urgent transmission from Colonel Brockman.
Whatever comes out of that pod, kill it!
Which, do you know anything about Stranded? Apart from the fact we just watched it. But why was it being screened? That's the question that kept going through my mind.
So the reason I chose it is, or the reason I suggested it rather, was I was doing my, skimming through like reviews of movies that came out that week.
And
I'm not ashamed to admit this because I think most people do this, and I realise it's to the detriment of modern journalism.
You were doing it naked?
No. Oh, okay. I realise it's to the detriment of modern journalism, but I only read reviews of films that are either A or D or below. Because if they're D, I want to have a little giggle.
So 5 stars or 1 star?
Precisely. These are. I don't want to read about
3-star movies.
A C-star, right?
Yeah, right.
So this one got a D minus,
right?
Which is obviously pretty bad. And it was Christian Slater fights aliens.
Right.
And I think I was going on about how it was really bad, it was terrible, and unusual things. But I couldn't stop getting the sentence Christian Slater
fights
an alien on the moon out of my head, and I thought,
because that's what it is, right?
And I thought, well, I wonder if, given that this is being reviewed, like maybe it's getting a shout, and so maybe, given that we're in New York, maybe this is only 2 cities in the world this will ever be seen in the cinema.
On the big screen is
New York and LA, maybe.
Yeah.
And sure enough, it's out for 1 week in one tiny screen in one movie house in Times Square, and I just thought, what a perfect movie to start off with, something a bit different and a bit, and it had Christian Slater fighting an alien on the moon,
and that's
what attracted me to it,
right?
To be honest.
And what's interesting is that like anyone who kind of follows the show regularly, or follows our Facebook, I should say, there was kind of indication on the Facebook that like I was kind of getting a bit I don't know, phased by the whole thing. We're hitting our 2-year anniversary.
You were a little bit down. You had the 2-year after movie diner podcast.
I got past the terrible twos, and then I was like, but now what? You know, just the idea of keep doing what we were doing was fine. You know, I have lots of great co-hosts and stuff. It wasn't revving my engine.
Right.
So I had been knocking about like all these different ideas of what I could do. And then you suggested seeing this movie in Times Square. We normally do our weekly hangouts. That's been a thing we've done, whether we've done a podcast or not.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I think it was Chip's brother who commented on the Pacific Rim thing. He was like, I really liked the diner atmosphere of it. You know, you should review the diners. And it was then that the combination of you saying, let's go see Stranded, and Chip's brother saying, you should review the diners, that I just suddenly went, wah, 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 and I suddenly went, that has revved my engine in a way that I haven't been excited about it since I started the podcast 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
The idea of
a new diner.
A new diner every week, a new movie house every week, where possible.
Where possible, great.
And try and discuss the movie and kind of discuss the neighborhood and just kind of the experience of going for those movies. Because, you know,
First of all, like, the experience of going to this movie house, I would say, for me, was very cool. It
very
is definitely
cool.
The highest cinema I've ever been to. We had to go up a whole load of escalators to get right to the top of what is essentially a skyscraper.
Yeah.
And we had a big view out of the whole city, and by the time we got to the top, we were right next to like the rickety
beams of
beams
the place
and whatnot that did have like fetid growth on them.
Right.
The best way
to describe the beams was
just kept going up and up and up and up.
Was
and up
fetid
and up
growth.
Until you were like in like this tiny little cinema right at the top of some, you know, essentially, you know, balanced on top of some wobbly building. Like all other cinemas.
It's not the most straight up cinema I've been to. I've been to one where literally there's only one screen on every floor and there's 8 floors and you have to go up and up and up and up to the point where even by the time you get to the 8th floor they've given up giving you escalators and it's just stairs. So the last 2 levels you have to run up for the sake of your own. But
so Christian Slater might be quite pleased that his cinema had an escalator to
it. Yeah. I think what it is rather in New York, in order to pack stuff in, especially around Times Square or in the Village where buildings are smaller and stuff like that, which are the 2 places I've been where they have like very high cinemas, it's just a case of there isn't the right ground floor footage to have one of those big cinemas that go.
Other than the slight distracting thing, I don't know what movie was playing underneath us,
right?
But my feet probably enjoyed that movie more.
Yeah, there's a lot of vibrations.
Yeah, there's a lot of vibrations.
Yeah.
That's fine. But the seats were really comfy.
Comfy,
it was clean.
Comfy cinema, clean cinema, good screen.
Yeah, good screen.
Good sound.
Yeah, it was good sound.
It was
actually
good sound. Like
even though there was like the vibrations underneath, it wasn't. And presumably we were probably right next to like 8 other cinemas.
Right.
But they didn't have that thing where, because it wasn't like the loudest movie.
No.
It wasn't interrupted by anything. And there were people in there. Because we were a little bit surprised, given this is the last day that Stranded starring Christian Slater is going to be
out. It's the second to last
possibly
screen.
Possibly in the world.
And possibly in the world ever. I think it's going to be a big hit in Belgium.
It's not. In Belgium. Have you ever been through Belgium on a train?
Yes.
It looks like, I mean, it really looks like the most. Oh, okay. I'm sure it's lovely. It looks really bad from the train.
It looks really boring.
It looks like it breeds serial killers. That's what it does. Every single town you pass looks like eventually it will break your mind.
Right, exactly.
That town.
Yeah. I think it's going to do very well in Chechnya or somewhere. It's going to do very well in.
Ryan Adams is very big in Chechnya, I believe.
I think this movie has
every chance.
But no, it's okay. So to start the movie, or to give you the idea of what the movie was like, basically, there have been a lot of movies made lately the Sci-Fi Channel, for Netflix, for whatever, that are purposefully made cheesily bad, tongue-in-cheek, normally involving sharks, octopuses, Octosharks, sharktopuses, aliens, stuff like that.
I say this seems almost to belong to like those. There seems to be like a ground, and I don't know why it is. I can only assume it's like international distribution or something. But like those John Cusack movies that keep getting made.
Right, the beer.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? Like,
they're all made in
still,
Eastern Europe. All
yeah,
of them.
It's like it's not like a like you might have called it 5 years ago, like made for DVD.
Right.
Get
straight
your
to DVD. Right.
Yeah, right.
But that's what I'm saying is
that's not happening now.
Just what's interesting about now is that back in the day, the haven of B movies, the 40s, the 50s, and the 60s, the big thing happening in America was drive-through.
Right.
So even and also the distribution was different. The distribution literally was when like and it didn't matter whether it was a big movie like Gone with the Wind or whether it was like a Roger Corman movie. They went from town to town. There was never this. It's on 3,000 cinemas Friday night. Boom, here we go. Never happened. Even with old movies like Gone with the Wind or Ben Hur or any of those, there was Sound of Music was shipped from place to place and ran for months in cinemas across the country and drive-ins across the country, which is why someone like Corman back in the day could play on an even playing field. Well, now it's a bit different. The playing fields have been divided between the theatres, which predominantly are going to be multiplexes, predominantly are going to screen studio-issued, studio-mandated stuff, because most of the theatre chains are owned by studios or subsidiaries of studios. And even if it's a multiplex, you're going to get Harry Potter on 15 screens rather than three or four.
It's going to make that much.
And then the other theatre thing is you get the art houses in places like, you know, Austin, Texas, or places like New York City, or like LA, or, you know, wherever it is. The big cities, Chicago, DC, they're going to have maybe one or multiple art house theatres that are going to show you foreign films, your B movies, your midnight screenings, things like that.
But again, all designed to make money.
Right. In fact, the Draft House chain and the Landmark chain, who are the two biggest, most well-known ones in the States, kind of make their living off, during the day we're going to show the Criterion Collection type movies, the foreign ones and the talkies and the thinkies and the ones where people stare out of windows with cups
the
of...
The talkies? I think they've been showing
No, the ones in which lots of people sit around and
lots
talk.
Lots of talking.
Right. And then they're normally in black and white and made by Noah Baumbach, and you just want to kill him.
The fucking matchsticks.
And then you've got midnight screenings, which they obviously all do. And, you know, what's interesting about the New York 42nd Street is obviously its history was it was all porno theatres, B-movie theatres, run-down grindhouses, things like that. And then it's been completely Disneyfied in the last 15, 20 years, where really, there's only two big cinemas on 42nd Street now, that and they're the AMC 25.
Which is where we just were.
Right, and they're the Regal. And they both have, I think the Regal has like 15 screens, I think the AMC has 25 screens. And what's interesting about it is that I'm sure like Pacific Rim was playing on two or three screens, and
yeah, the 3D was playing like next door.
Right, and what else is the big release this week? Wolverine is probably playing on two or three screens. But what's nice about it, unlike a multiplex that most people would be used to, they've obviously set aside a couple of screens for the smaller movies. In fact, I've seen the odd black and white movie, the odd Woody Allen movie, the odd foreign movie advertised at those theatres, as well as being advertised at like Lincoln Plaza.
So here's my question then, right?
Right.
Clearly, you would make your, you know, John Cusack is...
Oh, that's what I was going to
like
say.
So, Gennaro cop, and in this one, Christian Slater is Fighting Alien on the Moon.
Right.
Like, you would expect to get your money back from, like, DVD sales.
And then...
Right? From, like, Blockbuster or whatever. You know, you go, well, listen, we'll sell this to Blockbuster, and they'll, you know, we'll get, like...
Well, no, this is what I was going to say. The other
side
of it...
So how do they make their money out of something, like, nowadays, out of that movie?
Because the other side of it now is streaming. The other side of it now is streaming. It's not DVDs anymore. Although DVDs are still actually selling better than most industry professionals will tell you, actually the statistics are that DVDs and videos are still selling quite well, Blu-rays and things. Not as well as they would like, of course, but they're selling okay. Certainly not the death knell that everyone thinks it is. But streaming is where it's at. We've seen, obviously, you've got Hulu, you've got Crackle, you've got Netflix, you've got Vudu. You've got your all your cable boxes have videos on demand. And
oh, lovely, thank you.
That looks great, look at that.
Oh, that's terrific.
Thanks very much, man. That's great, thank you.
So how much for still?
I would just tuck into
I would just go down the microphone.
Look at this bowl, man, that's awesome. But yeah, so
in Carson City, we don't eat sandwiches with our hands.
No, right. Well, they probably would eat that with their hands, but they probably would have enormous beards to soak up them. So yeah, it's all about streaming right now. So a movie like that, and a movie like the John Cusack one, you're talking about Number Station or things like that,
which is pretty good, I thought.
Yeah, they're going to be made for two things. They're going to be made for the foreign DVD market, you know, the Eastern Bloc,
right,
and Russia and Georgia and places like that.
So what's the selling point for those places? Like,
it's famous stars in, I guess, in movies they can. I don't know. It's. I can only assume that in certain countries there is like, they don't have the access to everything we have the access to. I can only assume that's what it is. So if one movie ekes out that happens to have Cusack in it or whatever it is, I mean, I know why they're made over there. They're made over there because they're cheaper. But why they sell over there,
Okay, let's just say for the sake of argument, right? Even assuming that that movie cost, I mean, I don't know, but like 1 or 2 million. Right, that's pretty low bucks.
Well, there was a lot of model work in it. The landing site on the moon was all modern.
That's true, but even
just like, dropped the thing down.
Even like 1 or 2 million. How do they make their money back when they're sending it streaming? They must send it like bundled up in a package. It's not as if Netflix is. No one's going to be banging down their door to get their hands on that particular property.
Right.
Anyway, you know what? We should talk about the movie instead of talking about. I'm just fascinated because.
Me too. No, I don't have the answer to your question. But what I would say is that what made Stranded so interesting for me to see on the big screen is that the question that goes through your head while you're watching it is like, this never happens, that a movie like this gets screened. Now,
right.
You take something like Sharknado, which came out, it did huge business on Twitter, everyone was talking about it, it's immediately rushed a sequel into production, it's like the great ratings on the Sci-Fi Channel. In order to capitalize on the cult midnight screening movie market, for one day only, they're going to have Sharknado in theaters, right? That's an event, that's a set-up thing. But having this movie stranded for 1 week in a theater in New York, I don't know where that comes from. It's not produced by anyone famous. It's not directed by. Oh well, apparently the director did Battlefield Earth.
Yeah, but how is he still working? How does he get meetings with anybody? Except presumably Scientologists, I guess.
Right.
They must owe him something. They must buy him breakfast like once a month or something.
Yeah.
I don't know if he is a Scientologist, but I don't even know how they work. But you know what? Let's talk about the movie.
Yeah, well, you give us the plot.
All right, well, okay. The plot. The plot is that Christian Slater, the worst doctor in space, a bloke that looks like he ought to be like a children's TV presenter from the 80s. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, he looked like the blonde one from Trev and Simon.
Mm.
That's who he looked like. I thought any minute now he's going to tell me to swing his pen.
And Janine Garofalo's stunt double.
Well, that's giving her too much credit.
That's right.
She was abysmal. She looked like, you know, you probably don't know the comedy troupe The State.
No.
But there is a tall woman in that. She looked like her stunt double.
Oh, okay, fair. So they're on the moon. Why they're on the moon? Oh, that's easy. That's explained quite well, actually.
Drilling.
They are drilling.
Right.
What they're drilling for...
Never explained.
Presumably moon rock, because everybody needs moon rock, right?
In fact, maybe in the future, the entire Earth's currency is moon rock.
Mm. Right.
Maybe they're drilling for cheese. Or diamonds.
I just saw you find anything.
Sorry, man, could I get the gravy... The brown gravy? Thanks.
Alright, so you know what? I'm not going to... Without commenting on... For lots of reasons that don't make sense.
Right.
In fact, nothing really makes sense in the entire movie, and we'll get to that.
Uh-huh.
Basically, they're on a moon base.
Right.
And the moon base gets... drilling. And the moon base gets destroyed by meteors, I think it is. Thank you.
Thanks, my friend. Thank you. Yeah, meteor shower, right.
It gets destroyed by a meteor shower. And
well, two-thirds of it does, or whatever.
And one of the crew members has to be sent out in this meteor shower to fix something, because if it's not fixed, then they're all doomed.
Carbon monoxide.
Yeah.
is pouring into the base.
Yes, but how is her doing? It makes no sense.
It also, once they've done all this, once she's run, risked her life, blah, 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 he then presses a button and sucks it all out into space, which he could have done at the beginning anyway.
So the whole movie is full of stuff.
The whole movie is full of things where you're just like, why do they do that? That's weird.
It's all basically a setup.
And what's really funny is it's written by two people. Normally when something's written by two people, one person writes something and the other one goes, you can't do that. What are you doing? Whereas these are obviously two people. Maybe they're like conjoined twins and they just don't have...
I can only assume they wrote it in different, like, cities.
Or different planets,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, I keep interrupting.
Okay, here it is. The whole thing is basically a big giant setup for getting an alien into an enclosed space, right? That's fine, that's been done before, no problem. They do have an interesting hook, right? Which they totally and completely fail to ring any suspense of whatsoever.
Well, they totally waste it.
Right, but it is quite an interesting hook. The hook being that they are all potentially suffering from carbon monoxide poisoning, right?
Right.
So a lot of the opening part of the movie is all these horrible things happen, or at least in theory, in the writer's minds, and probably in the director's minds, and probably in the minds of the coke-addled producers who bankrolled
right.
it.
Right.
That it would be quite a cool idea if you could have a whole load of weird things happening to these people and they couldn't be sure
right.
if what was happening was real or not, right?
Mainly because they were surrounded by the worst doctor in the world.
Mainly because, we will get to him, and the how one door in a space station
yeah.
probably had... Well, I would argue the best actor
was the door.
Was the door.
Yeah.
Was the door.
Yeah.
Because it was amazing.
Open
without
and shut.
That door,
yeah.
right, that
yeah.
film completely falls to pieces.
Yeah. If that door had just remained shut, like yeah. Christian Slater asked it
like
to the beginning of the movie.
Right. But that's the essential idea, is that an alien gets trapped on the base with Christian Slater and his crew, and it, you know, obviously kills them all, right? That's the idea.
Right.
And the hook being they're not, because of this carbon monoxide poisoning, they don't know if they're hallucinating. They don't know other people who listen.
Right.
They don't know who to believe. So that has potentially some interesting avenues they can go down. That's like claustrophobic. They completely failed to do anything with that. Because I can only assume the reason this film got made was because that premise is in itself quite interesting from a director's point of view.
Sure.
But they made a fatal mistake, in my opinion.
Right.
I mean, they made fatal mistakes, although they're not. But the big fatal mistake with movies like this is you can't start these movies with jargon. People who don't get science fiction movies, who don't like science fiction movies particularly, think that it's all about getting to the next, you know, scare. It's
right.
all about getting your characters into the next setup.
Right.
You know what I mean? The room where they're going to be attacked or whatever. How they get there doesn't matter because it's all space jargon bollocks anyway.
Right.
We don't even care. So
right.
the whole first 15-20 minutes of the movie, when the base is being destroyed by the meteorites and this woman's being sent out, none of it makes any sense. It's all jargon. It's all we've got to get you out there because if you don't sort out this carbon monoxide thing, then we're all going to get poisoned. Everything she does makes no sense because the first thing she does is open a door
right.
to like the damage. There we go. If the door's closed and sealed and beyond it is the damage, I'd probably leave it there. There's
True.
No sense in opening the door and sending somebody through into it.
No.
And the plan is, well, we know we've got to get that thing fixed. Right, and how are you going to fix it? Well, I'm going to take the meteorite off it. Right, how's that going to help? If the meteorite has destroyed this machine,
right.
how is taking the meteorite off the destroyed machine going to help? None of it's ever.
It's going to blow more carbon monoxide
right.
into the base.
Which it does. And
Which
then
does,
and then she
right.
spots a rock, or this meteorite, that's like covered
but
in...
Hang on a second.
Yeah.
Why is there carbon monoxide? I mean, because we create it, right? We take in oxygen and we pump out.
They don't care. It's the worst kind of writing when.
What I'm saying is, there would only be as much carbon monoxide as they would be creating. Why would there suddenly be all these reserves of carbon monoxide?
From the drilling? I don't know. Maybe they're drilling for carbon monoxide? Maybe there's not enough carbon monoxide on the earth. Everyone's killing themselves with carbon monoxide. It doesn't. I'm telling you, the only reason carbon
monoxide... You understand what I'm saying, though, right?
No, I do, but okay. But this is my point. They went, what could cause hallucinations? Carbon monoxide can cause hallucinations. It's fine, we'll have an accident where carbon monoxide gets released into the base. That's why none of it makes any sense. It takes two people sitting in a diner, because I've done this.
Right.
Right? An hour, maybe two, to right. come up with the answers to these questions. Because anytime you write a screenplay, right? Anytime you write a screenplay, there are gaping holes in it. And you know, I need to get this guy from here to here. This thing needs to happen, because otherwise the whole film falls to pieces. So how right. do I make it happen? And you sit down and you think and you think and you think. And you come up with something halfway plausible, right? This is a film where they didn't bother to do that.
No.
It's like the whole thing reads like they couldn't be bothered to have those meetings. Or, so they just shoved them down the corridor towards their doom. That's
or
it.
The script was a lot longer and more dense and the producers tore out vast pages of it for money reasons.
That's possible, but... Anyway, what the thing was...
Sorry, yeah.
If she found some spores on the meteorite... And the worst doctor in Scotland...
Every decision every character makes this movie... Well, I will shut up after this. Because I know I talk too much.
No, it's fine.
But every decision every character makes this movie is completely devoid of sex.
Except quarantine her, which is devoid... Like, it's completely logical, but then they never follow it through.
They have a command structure that might as well be, like, Christian one Slater potato, goes, two potato.
Christian Slater says, well, we have to quarantine her. And the doctor's like, but I need round-the-clock attention to this woman. And you're like, why? Because this doctor who looks at this woman who gets impregnated by the spores and starts to form a giant alien baby in her uterus looks at her and goes, no, I think it's just a cyst.
Yeah, yeah, it's probably got nothing. You know that thing that I was looking at earlier? This, like, the doctor?
Which never came back. He has a trunk of spores which were, like, reproducing exponentially really, yeah. really, really quickly. Like one of those covered things you go, where you put your hands in the glove, whatever they're
you go,
called.
That small little plastic box isn't going to hold this rapidly.
Rapidly increasing what looked like boiling eggs.
Yeah, because you assume, well, that's what's going to happen. But.
Yeah, I thought that was going to burst out
see,
and form into a giant monster.
That's my whole point about the whole movie, is they wanted this shot where it's like, they wanted to instill, it's all about, the reason why it's quite a good B-movie, right? How about a check?
Well, that's what I was trying to get to at the beginning of the
right,
my
no, you know,
spiel.
You're quite right. The reason it's a good B-movie is everything is designed purely to elicit, like, a particular emotional response, and none of it needs to make any sense.
What I was saying at the beginning about why I went off on my diatribe about Sci-Fi Channel movies and stuff like
right,
that
right, sorry, yeah.
was that this one didn't seem to be made particularly tongue-in-cheek.
No.
Like it
no,
felt
it was deadly, deadly serious.
Well, I don't know how deadly serious it was, but it
no,
felt
it was,
like
it was deadly serious.
It felt like a legitimate B movie.
Mm.
In other words, like something like the movie Moon. If anyone, like, I was a fan of Bruce Campbell back in the VHS days, and I would pick up like Mind Warp and Moontrap and all these movies that were made, of course, with the idea to, like, you know, homage or continue what had been done in the 50s and the 60s, but also because someone was like, I want to make a sci-fi movie about a mad 20,000-year-old robot on the moon, and I'm going to do it in a Michigan basement for 50p and a, you know, handful of ham rolls or whatever. You know, let's get Chekhov from Star Trek and Bruce Campbell because he's not doing anything, and let's make that movie. And it felt like that's what this was like.
Yes.
We have a warehouse in Bulgaria that has a bunch of leftover sets from Space 1999 from the 70s, which was last used by Martin Landau when he still had brown hair or whatever. Let's get Christian Slater and let's make this Alien on the Moon picture. It didn't feel like a bunch of guys sitting around go, you know what stoners want at 2 a.m? They want a space picture. They want Christian. It didn't sound like it felt more legitimate than that. And I know it seems sort of odd to be like picking out legitimate status in terms of B movies because they're all meant to be kind of hokey and fun. But, you know, this one wasn't so much concerned with, you know, plot machinations, character development, or anything like that. It was someone who literally went, okay, spores, alien baby, like, replicates a crew member. Why? I don't know, because we've seen that
before. It
did before.
Have constant, I will say this.
Constant motion, constant
yeah, yeah,
movement.
Constant momentum. And one of the things, it just wanted to get to the next thing that's going to happen, which is fine. Except that after a while, you start to realise that in any scenario like that, someone has to say, like, the obvious thing to do, like, even if you ignore it, and if you are going to, you've got to have a good reason.
Which he did. He kept saying quarantine.
It was really simple, right? Uh-huh. I've just brought back in a meteor that's covered in really gooey, weird stuff. Right, that's fine, no problem. Right, I want that quarantined. So the first thing you do is, like, he goes, it's been safely quarantined. Except for that bit, like, put the test tube over there. But it's not, that's not really quarantine, though, is it? That's just something in a tube in a room.
But even before that, the worst doctor in the world...
He was the worst.
She wanted to cut open the meteorite and look at the spores, and he was like, no, I'll take care of it, don't worry. And he thought, oh, okay, great, he's going to go and put it somewhere. He put it on
next
his desk.
Yeah, next year he's put it on his desk.
Put it on his desk, cuts it open and goes, oh, look, those spores are come tumbling out.
It was... And then she obviously gets infected. Like, they're handling this thing that's got, like... What they say about it is, it's reproducing at a crazy rate. I've never seen anything like it.
Right.
And then right after they say that, they turn around and look at the woman who's, like, cut a finger and got infected. And she goes, oh, I feel really faint. Oh, I feel really nauseous and terrible. I better go and lie down. And they go, okay, and let her leave. As opposed to, right, clearly you've become infected by this substance that we know nothing about.
Right.
And it's clearly really dangerous. And managed to survive in space.
She goes round the corner and has the most amazingly loud birthing pains where she's like grunting and moaning and screaming.
What was cool is
no one ever comes out of the science
bay. What was super cool, and you definitely get an award, tonight's award for spotting what's about to happen. Well, all she does is like for them, and you said, is she about to give birth to a crazy
alien?
And then sure enough, she wakes up.
She had to have an alien baby.
Alien baby.
Because I was sat there and I was thinking, if I'm scripting this, spores, alien baby.
Yeah, like that's Chris Slate comes in and goes, listen, we've got a quarantine. And he goes, no, I don't think it's a very good idea. How is it not a good idea? Is it not a good idea to lock her up?
Not only that, but we were meant to be concerned for this like female officer.
Like,
right.
Oh, Christian Slate has been such a bastard.
Right. Yet we had at no point established any of the characters. The characters were like four Yahoos that could quite easily have been replaced by Robert Kilroy Silk in a bag. And it wouldn't have made any difference.
To the drilling operation, either.
Right. So what ended up happening, you've got these four characters that we have no idea. Is one sleeping with her? Is one her boy? You know, like, there was none of that. There was just this case of she had gone through to apparently try and save our lives, even though what she'd done is make matters worse.
Made matters a lot worse.
Right? So the other two, the worst doctor in the world, and Trev and Simon, he was incredibly upset that Slater wanted to quarantine her. Instead of thinking, hang on a second, she's clearly got covered in spores. Like, you only have to look at her to know covered in spores. Then she's 6 months pregnant in the space of, like, 3 minutes. And the doctor's like, it's probably a cyst or an ectopic pregnancy or something like that. That's been known to happen, he says, referencing nothing that's ever been known to happen.
All you need to know about the doctor, other than he's appalling, because if everyone just listened to Chris's at the beginning, which was, well, clearly this isn't right, we better just lock her up in this room and not let her out for a while. And the doctor goes, I can't do that. You've got to let me in. And Chris is like, all right then, you can get in whenever you like, but you've got to tell me first. The whole plan of how to deal with this
involves closing
the door. But then all they do is they just keep opening the door and running in again.
But when they open the door, they go into the room, the door remains open.
Remains open.
It's like there's no way to lock the door from inside.
Uh-huh.
So even though it's meant to be a quarantined emergency bay or whatever it's meant to be.
I walk in the quarantine room, door's open.
Door's open, leaving any room for airborne spores to be floating around the ship or carbon dioxide.
What was so cool, though, it really got to a point in the script, right, where... The entire ridiculousness of this premise is only being held by the thinnest of threads, which is that we've all agreed that we'll try and keep the door closed much as possible.
There was one great bit where the worst doctor in the world went to run out of the medical bay, and clearly the actor suddenly went, oh shit, I need to shut the door. Literally turned around and went, like, almost turned around in mid thing and went, oh yeah, and then, like, had to press this convoluted.
But that's what I mean. Like, that was the point of the script. He's got to go back and close the door, hasn't he? Because we made the door a fucking thing now. All anybody's doing, they're not talking about the disease, they're not talking about the virus, I'm not talking about the crazy thing that's happened to this woman, and what, because we can't have them talk about any of those things or the film will be over. So you go, well, we need to lock her up. So they keep talking about the door. Should we open the door? Should we shut the door? When's the door open? When's the door closed? The whole movie starts revolving around this fucking door.
The movie might as well have been called The Door.
It might as well have been called
we should have closed the door. That's what the movie should have become.
Definitely.
So every time the actor, I've got to point the script, right, where every time the actors go through the door, they have to, like, even if they're running out, like, okay, let's go, and they say, da, 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 they run through the door, and then they have to stop, turn around, type in the numbers, and close the door, because the door has become a fucking albatross around the neck of the film's logic.
Right.
Like, that's what it is. It's
but
an
that was
albatross.
Amazing. I loved it.
It was
terrific.
It was
I loved my whole point about it. But so, she gives birth to the It's Alive baby. If anyone's ever seen any horror movies from the 70s and early 80s, the It's Alive baby is what she basically gives birth to.
Oh, yeah. No, you really enjoyed that.
I really enjoyed that, and I was so disappointed when the baby did not remain a baby for long.
Yeah, it was such a shame. It was such a stupid, like...
I could have gone for, like, an evil alien baby rampaging through the ship.
Yeah, it would have been fine.
Because apparently it had the ability to chew through metal, because at one point they showed, like, a metal grate that it had climbed through or whatever.
Oh, yeah. And break glass.
Right. But then what happened was it went down into the bowels of the... wherever they were.
No, it bit the children's television presenter.
It bit Trevor.
At which point, he goes, no, there's something here, right? Because somebody just bit me. And he pulls up his trouser leg, and there's a huge fucking bite mark there.
Right.
And the doctor goes, no, you just hallucinate. You just cut yourself some glass, probably.
Probably.
Yeah, you've got no idea what's going on, right? She's lying
there. There's no
there.
Glass in the wound.
Yeah.
It's clearly bite marks.
She, for a little while ago, was, to all intents and purposes, pregnant with God knows what.
Yeah. Oh, right? No, it's just a cyst that
But then it just burst. And you're...
Because when cysts burst in your uterus, it's fine. You're fine later.
Absolutely, yeah.
Absolutely fine.
That is a well-known medical fact. That is well-known, bruv.
The way it bursts, you're absolutely fine minutes later.
And if anybody does complain about being bitten by a creature,
or about giving birth,
probably best to ignore them, or even better, take them, because he goes, oh, look at that, somewhere else. Yeah, no, definitely take him somewhere else. He's complaining about being bitten by a mad creature that, if he's right, was just in her. Better get him out of there. Spread the infection as far as possible. That's what I do. And then he rolls up his leg again. And you see, in even closer up, how this is obviously a fucked up, crazy, infectious, mad
bite. It's passing.
And he goes, yeah, look, forget about it. The doctor goes, you drink too much. You're not drinking enough, mate. Frankly, more drinking is what you need.
What's really funny is the worst doctor in the world puts a gauze bandage on it.
That's what he does. Bland. He's the worst.
He doesn't clean the wound.
I can only assume.
He doesn't even pour alcohol on the wound, which would at least be something that I would do.
I can only assume, right, that the drilling station is, in fact, completely automated. And what they do is, the worst, most hopeless human beings on the planet, they go, you can be the doctor.
Yeah.
you can be the colonel. And they just send them off to that little station. Yeah. So, I mean, to make everybody feel better.
Yeah.
Basically, only the worst people of tiniest brain.
Right. Because, I mean, essentially it's Leviathan in space. That's essentially what it is.
Right.
You go on a mission, suddenly you find something, you bring it back to the thing, and hell breaks loose. But what was hilarious about it, like, the pregnancy was fantastic. The very scene before, he is in the science bay, and he's like, it's reproducing at a rapid rate, is what he said. The very next minute, she, right... has an enormous pregnant belly, reproducing at a rapid rate. And he said, as the doctor, even though he just said the line reproducing at a rapid rate, he went, we don't know what it is. I need to keep an eye on it. And I'm like, I think it's those spores that were reproducing at a rapid rate. He's like, well...
Call me a nervous nanny.
Yeah, could be anything, though. It could be a cyst. It could be a balloon up a jumper.
Basically,
it's not, but...
But what's great is... There then reaches a point in the movie about, must have been about an hour in.
Are we talking really loudly and disturbing everyone?
I don't think so. Okay. I'm sure they've had people talking louder. Given the neighbourhood, I'm guessing we're not the loudest,
this
craziest
is
people.
This is a damn cool diner. Anyway, very
well. So it reaches that point in the movie where they've gone, right, we are now officially bored
with the door.
I'm trying to explain
what's going on.
Why this is happening.
Because the baby goes down into the hull and grows... into a replica of the engineer for reasons known only to
the TV presenter. So once that's happened, there will now be no more plot.
Right.
Officially. Once the alien is turned into the children's TV presenter, there will be no more plot.
Right.
So at that point, every character on the space station suddenly realises exactly what's going on.
Right.
At that point, we're probably hallucinating. And let's not completely let go of that, because we don't know that there's parts of things going on that they're not hallucinating. There is still carbon monoxide poisoning. But there's a point where... for no reason, he goes, oh, yeah, so we know that the alien came on board, that what's-her-face gave birth to it. But these are things that you can legitimately guess at, that's fine.
Right.
And then he says, and it's mutated into the form of that deadlight.
Right.
That is a bit of a leap.
Well, Christian
Slater said, oh, yeah, he came in and tried to kill me. And instead of going, all right, well, let's just hold our horses here, because you've been out cold. It might have been that guy trying to kill you. It might have been the alien. You were just like hallucinating.
Right.
There's all manner of explanations. Jumping straight to, yeah, the creature's mutated into an exact genetic replica of the dead engineer. It's a bit like...
Including the dead engineer's thoughts. You could have taken,
like, yeah, well, yeah. But that, again, is like, he's taken his thoughts, yeah. Right, and how do you... it doesn't matter.
And then she was able to read...
She was able to read the thoughts.
But not actually influence it in any way at all.
No.
Yeah, or really do any use with the
And their
reading.
Plans were so... I mean, anybody could have come up with better plans.
Right. No, but the funny thing was...
If they were
the
like
funny thing was,
human rats in an alien maze...
In the thing, right, it is replicating and whatever in order to hide, right... So, as a survival technique,
right?
In this one, the alien grows into a replica of the guy. And I'm like, why a replica of that guy? He then kills that guy in a really messy, obvious, he's definitely dead type way. Completely negating the fact, therefore, in a survival way, that he's replicated him.
Right, yeah, you're right. The whole, like,
because if you killed him quietly and stuck his body down a chute, then replicating him makes perfect sense.
Yeah, there was no,
killing him in a big bloody nasty way.
Yeah, you could have gone up. There was definitely a germ of an idea. You know, there was
plenty of germs of ideas. Here.
There could have been, you know, you could have ratcheted up the tension with, like, is this guy who he says he is?
Yeah,
is he not?
I don't know that they were ever going to ratchet anything up except maybe my patience. The best one, though. The creme de, as if this movie wasn't chock full of what the fuckery to begin with, the final sequence has them running for the only escape hatch left.
Oh, that's
right?
Glorious.
And the escape hatch had so many plot problems with it, I don't know where to begin. First of all, they had to power down the entire station to use the escape hatch, thus negating the fact that it was an emergency escape hatch. Because let's assume that all the power goes out and that's an emergency you have to escape from. Well, you're fucked if it has to power the escape hatch. Then, not only that, but in order to send the escape hatch off, one person had to be in the control room, the other person had to be in the escape hatch, both of which seem to be miles apart from each other. In between
the
which
escape
lots of confusion.
Failed at the one thing it was supposed to do.
Which was allow you to escape.
Which was allow you to escape.
Even when they set the escape hatch like in motion, ready to blast off into the stars, it went, your escape pod will be leaving in 3 minutes. And I'm like, what if a bomb had been detonated? Yeah. What if there was a gas?
What if we need to escape?
What if I need
quicker
to escape?
Than 3 minutes? Which is not beyond the realms of possibility.
No, considering it's an escape hatch. I don't know about you.
No, we've got to divert power because the power in the station's out. Definitely don't build an escape pod that has a separate power source.
Yeah.
That would be crazy.
That would be crazy. Don't do that. That would be ridiculous.
No.
Surprises here. We don't out of fear. Fear of the listeners turning against us, never downloading the podcast again.
So anyway, even though she was in the escape pod and ready to go and everything was right, it was counting down, she came out of the escape pod for reasons unknown to her, to go, the escape pod's all ready, and then Slater goes, we'll get back into the escape pod then. Which I was thinking, why'd you leave it in the first place?
The escape pod became the new door. Shut the door, open the door, get out the escape pod. The weird thing was, right, the whole thing was building up to the wrong... It's going to run loads of endings of movies where they're all going to die off except one of them, probably the woman who ends up in the escape pod, and then, oh my god, the thing came with her or whatever, and that's fine. But instead it was like they run to the escape pod, they get it ready, they come out of the escape pod, as has been established, they can't stay in the fucking escape pod.
No. Breathing carbon monoxide the whole time.
While they're at the escape pod, surprise, the alien goes, well, if you're not going to, if you're not using it, perhaps I could, yeah? So he jumps in, and he's off. And they go, we've got to press some buttons to make it stop taking off. And Chris is like, unconvincingly presses some buttons. And then it still takes off. And he goes, damn. And then it's like, well, that's the end of the creature getting away, like the murderous killer creature getting away to Earth, away from the moon base, the one thing you're trying to stop doing. That's the end of your movie. That's not like a false climax. You know, it's like, well, the real climax is where they're going to live. It's too late for that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was crazy. It must have been a sequel.
But,
I never thought they were going to get a sequel.
Let's now go through the positive bits.
Okay, fine.
Because for me, the positive bits were that it was a genuine attempt. There wasn't any like tongue in cheekery. It was a genuine attempt to do a good old fashioned bonkers mad B movie.
Yeah.
The second thing that I have to give it like major plus points for was that I'm done with the chip.
Okay.
The major plus points for was the fact that it was in the theatre at all. Like that's
I did enjoy that a lot.
I did enjoy that. Thirdly, it was genuinely enjoyable.
Yeah.
Was 50% of it laughably enjoyable? Yes.
It was nice that there were so few people in the cinema that we could make jokes about while we were watching.
Right. And in fact, I laughed. By the third door closing, I was laughing at every door movement.
They made it out the door.
It was phenomenal. But the... Thanks, man. Thank you. It was
still
real
going
good.
On the chips. Thank you. Thanks very much.
Also, the effects were great.
Yeah, it was nice. It was models, and the creature was a model as well.
It was 90% non-computer generated. There was a little bit of computer generated.
I didn't see any computer stuff.
Well, you had the hologram. You had the spaceship.
Oh, I suppose so,
the spaceship that showed up conveniently at the end.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, and a lot of it was like surprising. Right, they were shit models, but it was kind of nice. Look, they did give it a good throwback.
At the beginning, as it zooms into the moon,
it was so obvious.
It was so obviously a few egg cartons overturned, painted grey.
Any Red Dwarf fans out there?
Yeah,
Red Dwarf models were more sophisticated.
Yes, but there was a whole bit with Slater wearing the leather jacket, and then there being like an engineer and whatever. And I was like, please break into some sort of like Red Dwarf-esque banter.
Yeah.
That would have been really good fun. In fact, although I didn't want it to be tongue-in-cheek, and I'm really happy that it wasn't, it could have done with a sense of humour.
It could have done a bit like there was, again...
But there could have been one funny character in it.
You could definitely... You could have taken that script away from them, and that it needed to be taken away from them, and given to somebody else. And you could have beefed up the whole, is this hallucinations? Are we going mad? You know, are you going mad or am I going mad? Because that was the whole... You know, there was interesting things to be done there. But the other interesting thing that could be done is Christian Slater was the only one there trying to do like sensible things,
right?
With people around him, including the doctor, you know, coming up with like really bad ideas.
Yeah. Well, he was the worst doctor in the world.
He was clearly the worst doctor in the world. The worst doctor
in
space.
I am a better doctor than him.
There's one amazing bit where he's like, Chris is like, he gets stabbed with a fucking knife or something, and he's sewn him up. And Zodica goes, I need you to stay there because I gave him some quite strong antibiotics. I'm not sure what they're going to do. Of course, what do you give antibiotics for?
Painkillers.
He's been stabbed. Painkillers, yes.
I mean, maybe to stave off infection, but let's figure out if that's even necessary first.
Anyway, right near the beginning, after she said, oh yeah, I brought a meteorite back in.
Also, he went, I don't know what the effects are. I would like to think that a doctor knows what the effects are of the pills he just forcibly put down your neck.
Absolutely.
While you were sleeping.
But right at the beginning, after she said, I brought the meteorite back with the crazy stuff on it.
Right.
Chris is like, what do you do? And there's a bit, when they all leave, and he's left alone, he goes, scientist.
Right.
Like that. And that was quite cool. That was a nice line.
Yes.
And that could have been his character. His character could have been trying to maintain order amongst, essentially, fools. Because, to be fair, a lot of scientists, especially great ones, can be very narrow-minded,
right,
and they can only see what's right in front of them.
Sure, sure, sure.
And their curiosity can obviously get the better of them.
Yes.
And that, again, could have been a neat little angle. It could have been about, you know, sometimes when you're in a non-known situation, you're best off, you know, not fucking with it. There were loads of things to just beef up a bit. And I only needed, like, a couple of... We needed two rewrites. One, to make sense of the fucking thing. Because it could make sense without too much trouble. And the other one was turning Chris Slater into a more, like, you know, Christian Slater, well, he does that thing very well. That his shtick could have worked really, really well.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like, I have to say, I felt like he was powering on 50%. I don't think he was necessarily operating on full Slater.
He had nothing to do.
No, he had nothing to do but go, shut the door. Okay, I'll open the door. No, can you shut it now? No, I'll open it. I think we should shut the door.
Even he was saying, this is ridiculous. What I'm saying...
It was a man spiralling into the despair portion of his life.
When the actor playing the guy doesn't even believe...
What
he's saying,
right.
As in, this is there's no way anyone would say this is a plan.
Right.
That's a problem, and that does throw you out of there.
But back to good points.
Right. Yeah.
Effects. Really, I really like the kind of gooey.
It was very.
It wasn't
gooey and bloody.
But without being exploitive, without being like.
No, it wasn't. It was genuinely unpleasant.
Like, it was just unpleasant. The noise, the sound design when she was meant to be like giving birth was particularly repulsive.
Yeah.
But I was so pleased that she gave birth to an alien baby.
It was pretty cool.
It could have been It's Alive on the Moon and they missed an opportunity. That's what I'm saying. Like, you needed. Someone like Larry Cohen, who I love. It needed Larry Cohen to come in and just be like, give Slater some dialogue, punch up the whole alien baby thing. Right. But apart from that...
That was the problem, actually. I think that was the problem with the script. It was the director co-wrote the script.
Right.
Which suggests to me that sometimes when a script isn't good, as in it's all about getting the characters and everything to like the next... Just the next like emotion and the next thing that's going to have to happen... It's because it's there's too much influence from the director. He just wants to get to the image and the feeling and, you know, the design he's got in his head.
Yeah.
And how he gets there doesn't interest him so much as, like, getting those moments down.
Although you can't really say that it was particularly stylistic.
No, it wasn't. No, that's...
It was serviceable.
Well, I'm saying, the things that interested him were eliciting emotion from the audience, eliciting reaction from the audience. And, right, you could tell those moments were there in them. You know, they were dotted regularly throughout the movie. But you need a producer to see the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like, that's what Corman would get those directors in. He would get those directors in to make sure those moments work. Everything that happened in between, the characters, you know, everything else. Like, the producer would be like, no, you know, we need to get him to do more of this and him to do less of that and forget this bit, doesn't work, move on to the next thing.
Right.
It needed that, like you're saying, like that Larry Cohen or that Roger Corman to be there and, like, direct everything.
Yeah.
You know, all that guy was doing, he was directing the movie, but he wasn't directing the characters or the actors or anything else or the script,
right.
You know? Everything was about these little moments, which, okay, it needs.
But you see, I don't know, I'm kind of fascinated by movies like this, not necessarily by the content of the movies themselves, but how they even come into being. That is fascinating for me. And... It's also joyous
thank
that stuff
you.
Like that
oh, thank you very much.
Thanks very much, man. It's kind of joyous that this stuff exists. So, you know, for me, that was the joy of seeing it. And I have to add, we both came out of the theatre happy and high as kites. We were really, like, jolly walking along. It didn't matter that a guy threw up in front of you. We were still, like, you know, excited.
No, I agree. It was a really fun time. I liked riding escalators all the way to the top of this like skyscraper. See this like,
and then crazy, riding an elevator down. And then riding an elevator down. Lady in the elevator
on a little stool. On a little stool. Asked us what floor
we wanted. Asked us what floor we wanted. Didn't get offended when I was rude and obnoxious.
You weren't rude and obnoxious.
And then when we got, well, I was like, "Well, you have a good job." Like I was.
I wasn't
kind
rude
of
obnoxious. That was nice.
I know. But
she liked that.
And then we got to the ground floor, and she
said, "Thank you for choosing again.
Thank you for choosing again too.
Have a lovely evening."
We didn't have a choice. You were the only place screening it in the entire metropolitan area, but
possibly the world,
possibly everywhere. But no, I would imagine that this will show up on video on demand if it isn't already, or on Netflix anytime soon. And I would give it a watch. It's worth one watch.
You could definitely do worse.
Yeah.
It was kind of fun. It was good to see in the context of it being achieved. I have to say, my biggest problem with it was, if I'm honest, is I did think about Screamers. And I did think, with very little money and one star, you can still make a good, you know, you can make a genuinely good, interesting
sci-fi movie. That I completely.
It lost me ever so slightly after about half an hour because I thought, you know, with just a little bit of effort, this could have been really good, like a genuinely good, like little B movie thriller.
And I think,
and as it was, it was badly put together. And now it was an enjoyable. The act of sitting in the movie theatre with you watching it was a really enjoyable experience.
Right.
But the film itself.
Right.
Was not very good, let's be honest. I think we're going to have to be honest.
Yeah, okay, I'll go with that.
Like, there were some John Cusack movies we go, it's not very good. But Raven or The Number Station, these have the same budget, also John Cusack, but these are actually
They probably have a higher, like five or six.
No, Number Station was just one location and, like, three actors. That cost beans. And that was I really enjoyed that. That was a really good little movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's... No, it wasn't. I mean, I can't hand on heart say, like, it was a great movie, but, you know, they missed the opportunity of doing an alien baby movie.
They did, with Christian Slater. Yeah. There was relatively... It really wouldn't have taken... It really only would have taken
a couple of rewrites to
turn it into a good little movie.
Okay, so no, I'm not going to recommend it. Well, I kind of want to recommend people go see it, just because it's... Little movies like this, it's kind of fun to watch Slater on this like mad roller coaster.
Again, he's not that
B-movery.
If he was having loads of fun with it,
true, I'd
recommend it. But
yes.
You're right, he was sleepwalking through it. He didn't believe anything he was saying.
You're right, Chief, you are right. Okay, so let's not recommend this one then. But it was a fun
experience.
Yes. And how about the diner? What have we thought about the diner? Well, I love the decor. I love the ambiance.
Decor was very cool. Food was pretty good. My sandwich was very good.
The food was better than what we had last time.
Coffee was okay. It wasn't too bad. Chips were right.
Like the gravy.
No, the gravy wasn't up to much.
Gravy wasn't up to much.
But I'd probably... Yeah, I mean, I think if anybody is, you know, coming to visit New York and they want, like, an authentic diner experience... This I would recommend this one because there aren't that many left. Most of them are just like big restaurants,
right?
And
it's been around since the 50s, and by the looks of it, was last decorated in the 70s.
I would say so, yeah. But it's very cool. It's proper old diner. When you look at it from outside, it's got, you know, the silver,
metalwork
outside walls, big windows,
awesome sign.
Yeah, proper signage. The orange vinyl seats. If you were going to come to New York and sit in a diner, this is the kind of experience that you would want. And I'd be stunned if they haven't filmed here.
It's a Tarantino diner.
Yeah. I'd be stunned if they haven't filmed here. Because you see a lot of these kind of diners in New York, but there aren't actually that many of them around.
No.
Really.
So I think we picked a good diner.
I agree.
I think we picked a good first experience for this experimental step towards the new sound.
I think if you were going to pick a movie that you could have a bit of a giggle... Watching, we could definitely do a lot worse.
And I can't tell you how the moment we discussed doing this last week, I wanted to do it there and then.
Yeah.
Like, I was so excited for this happening tonight and been so looking forward to this happening tonight. And it so energized me that I produced that X-Men episode in the course of literally a day and a half. We recorded it one night, it was done by the Sunday. Mm. We did the Doctor Action, which I recorded and got out in one night. I wrote three reviews, and I'm going to go home and write.
Oh yeah, I noticed that.
And I've just got really excited about stuff again.
Well, that's cool. Well, I'm really happy.
And the last thing I'm going to say on this whole thing is that since moving here, you have been in comparison to me, a little lukewarm on the whole New York thing.
Agreed.
This is my chance to kind of, because we're going to try out lots of different neighbours.
Well, every time you and I have gone out in New York, like the Hip Gig, right, or going to see a movie, it has been a really, really cool, very New York experience. And yeah, certainly like that, if the I can... experience of going to the Hip Gig was the best. Like, the concert itself was very, very good, but everything outside of the actual concert was the best I've ever experienced. Like, the actual going there, what you do afterwards, how you get home. Getting home, what you do after a concert in London is, like, maybe, like, probably one of the worst things to do in London.
Yeah.
Is trying to get home from a concert.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
From anywhere.
From what you do
You've
after a
concert. You've got murderers on a night bus, or screaming people.
You're
miles,
you're probably in North London, the tubes have shut. There's nowhere anywhere. You try to eat in London.
You
after,
get into a cab, and it's
midnight,
like
you're taking your life out of your hands.
You get into a cab, it's like that'll be £10. It's like I've just sat in here, that'll be £15.
Yeah. If you keep talking south of the river, get out.
Yeah.
After giving me £15. Yeah. Yeah.
Am I going to have to actually do my job? Okay. No, that's £50, or I'm not going to do it.
Whereas, yeah.
Or you could be driven into the Docklands and shot in the face.
Quite.
So, you know.
So it was better than that. But I agree. It was an extremely New York experience, right down to the guy.
Well, what I'm saying is, I want to show you areas of the city, and I want to find places.
Yeah, I think that'd be fun because I have
to make you fall in love with where you live.
We should go.
I know you love London, and I love London. I do. I love living in London, and I love visiting London, and I've visited London my whole life, and I love it. I do. But I also really love New York, and I want you to just love New York.
Fair enough. All right, well, I will open myself up to that possibility.
Look, we've been in the Port Authority neighbourhood. Not a good neighbourhood.
No.
And we found a good movie in a good thing with a
I
good
I will
sign.
Say this, it looks like there's lots of cans going by as well.
Oh, yeah.
Shall we?
Yes, let's. Thank you very much for joining us
Thank
this
you
week.
Very much for having me to the After Movie Diner. It was really fun and splendid. It's better than Pacific Rim. You can put that on your DVD cover.
Yeah, we enjoyed it more.
Yeah.
From Pacific Rim.
More enjoyable than Pacific Rim. Probably not better, to be fair.
Love it.
Like the show? Well, you can find our complete podcast archive over at amdpodcast.blogspot.com or aftermoviediner.com. You can send us an email at aftermoviediner@gmail.com, tweet us at aftermoviediner, or follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/aftermoviediner. Or why not be a part of the show and leave us a voicemail over at speakpipe.com/aftermoviediner. You can also support the show a number of ways, by spreading the word to family, friends and co-workers, by writing us a review over at iTunes or TalkShoe, by purchasing some excellent diner merchandise over at cafepress.com/aftermoviediner, by donating on our website, by advertising with our website, or maybe you're a regular Amazon user. If so, then before you make a purchase, go to amdpodcast.blogspot.com, aftermoviediner.blogspot.com, or aftermoviediner.com and click through the Amazon banner ads. It costs you nothing extra, but they throw us a few coins for the trouble. Or, like the movies we cover, then buy them over at our personal Amazon store, also on amdpodcast.blogspot.com. Really, thanks everybody for everything you continue to do, and please keep listening. But the fun doesn't stop there. Oh no, people, there's more. Yes, that's completely right. I am urging, nay demanding, every single one of my listeners goes over to www.youtube.com/MotornMedia. That's MOTERN Media. So like modern, but with a T. Go over to MOTERN Media on youtube.com and watch the film Local Legends. It is fantastic. It's a wonderful tome to the local entrepreneur, creative force, wanting to create art, wanting to make music, wanting to write films, wanting to do awesome stuff, but also with the desire to obviously earn some money off that and attract people to it and so on. And there's a fantastic story that develops around that, and also there's like a rom-com element to it, and it's It's amazing. It's kind of like Clerks meets Stardust Memories meets Deconstructing Harry. It's fantastic. Anyway, it's by Matt Farley. You will have heard him on a few shows ago discussing the film when I was on set in Massachusetts when I filmed a small cameo for the film. So, look, please, I urge everyone to go watch it over at youtube.com/MoturnMedia. Look it up, find Local Legends, the full feature film. It's available there, completely free to watch. I demand you go see it. It's absolutely fantastic. Anyone who's ever tried to do anything amateur or creative and tried to turn it professional, this is the film you want to watch. It's just a delight. It's funny, it's weird, it's wonderful. It deserves to be seen. I think it's some of the best stuff they've done. I would urge everyone to go watch that right away. Please, please, please do it. Plus, I have a cameo. So, please support Matt Farley in his venture to become just the most fantastic all-round oddball that there is. And go watch Moton Media's Local Legends on YouTube. Thank you. And now, the song.
1, 2, 3, 4, blaster. Blaster. Are you stranded on your moon base, Christian? Slayer, are you stranded on the moon? And did you get hit by a meteor shower? Was your head like that even at your finest hour? And is everybody going to be pretty much dead soon? Well, thanks to you, they are. Doctor, the worst in space. I should Coco. In fact, it could be the worst in the world. And did those meteors contain rapidly reproducing spores? And is a mutated alien baby growing in the belly of your only girl? You know you gotta shut them doors. Well, shut them doors. And shut them tight to avoid contamination by alien spores. And if you just shut the doors, shut them doors, you'd be partly the solution, Christian, and not the cause. Yeah. Well, does the alien spore run amok? Does he make a mockery of your motley crew? And does he mutate into your engineering mate? Do you know why he does that, Christian? Cause we haven't got a clue. We've looked at it from every angle that we can. Well, did you make this movie in a warehouse in Toronto? Maybe you filmed it in a Bulgarian shed. What made you sign? Or are you just killing time? Well, if so, you'll be pleased to know the time is well and truly dead. Christian Slater doing films like this. Don't you know it shuts them doors? Shuts them doors. You were a child star, but now you're showing your flaws. You're shutting doors. Films like this shut doors. Well, maybe next script you read like this, it should really give you pause. Or maybe you like it, maybe so should we. And maybe these films are the only kinds of films to see. And maybe the word movie should always be preceded by a B. Well, I don't know about all I've used, but that would be okay with me. And Christian Slater, don't you see it? Christian Slater, don't you see? Christian Slater, don't you make her, don't you make her? Christian Slater, don't you make her, don't you make her in Jamaica? Don't you make her in Jamaica, Christian Slater? Well, don't you break her, don't you make her, don't you make her, Christian Slater, don't you? Singing out.
There are men, and then there are second unit podcast men. The podcast you've just been listening to is part of the Second Unit Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at 2upn.blogspot.com or on Facebook under the Second Unit Podcast Network. Our fantastic list of shows include Drunk on VHS, We Came from the Basement, No Budget Nightmares, The After Movie Diner, Dr. Action and the Kick-Ass Kid, and Bloodbaths and Boomsticks. Take one podcast into the shower. Don't be a blithering idiot, Alan. We can give you the multiple podcast cleansing system all in one place that your hair deserves. Our programming is available across all platforms, from iTunes to Podomatic, TalkShoe to Stitcher, so you have absolutely no excuse. Listen today, and a free naked person of your choice will be shipped from Thailand to your door in a matter of weeks. The Second Unit Podcast Network, bringing you the action and leaving the boring stuff to the other guys. Bloody hell, who does a girl have to blow around here to get a decent beverage?